With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Dan, Arsenal fan. You can get me on Twitter at @_jersey_fits.
Hi, I'm Jake, Newcastle fan. You can get me on Twitter at JakeJack with two N's. I write for EPL Index and appear on the Championship pod on this channel as well.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me today, guys. A few weeks ago, we said we weren't going to talk about managers on the show anymore. Dave and I did a whole hour and a half long managerial special, which is still out if you'd like to go check that out. But then, unfortunately, there had to be two big high-profile managerial appointments this week, of course, involving Arsenal and Everton. It is the only newsworthy thing that those two clubs did together this week. Certainly not their match. But, of course, Arteta joining Arsenal, Ancelotti joining Everton, which will certainly surprise some, considering Ancelotti was one of the favorites to join Arsenal when the original sacking of Unai Emery happened. So just wanted to get your guys' take as kind of an initial reaction. Obviously, neither of them took charge of their clubs this weekend. But which do you think is a better fit for their new club?
It's honestly hard to say because neither of them stand out as an obvious fit for the specific club. I guess Arteta, just because he has the history of Arsenal, and Ancelotti at Everton just is such a move I did not expect. I have to say, I did not see that one coming. So I guess Arteta at Arsenal neither of them I think are classically obvious fits, but I think that is a more reasonable fit, a more expected one, especially since he was linked to the job when they hired Unai Emery. He does have the history of playing there and captaining there, and now he was at least an assistant at other high profile jobs, and Arsene Wenger almost hired or wanted to hire him as an assistant at Arsenal, but before Pep hired him away. Neither of them are really obvious fits, but I think Arteta makes a bit more, not even makes more sense, because obviously if Everton can get Ancelotti, you get him. It's just unexpected. That's just a bit more fits in my expectations of managerial hires.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think the Arteta one fits better with the club. And I think that it would be, I think for the Arsenal sort of maybe wanted to go that way before and maybe just got a little bit scared of his inexperience. But it seems like it's been a long time to make. And whereas the Ancelotti one is a bit out of left field. If he hadn't have left his job at Napoli, he probably wouldn't have ended up at Everton at this point. Could see the appeal for Everton. He's obviously a winner. He's never really done a bad job anywhere. Although you could say at Bayern and Napoli, they didn't go as well. But wasn't a complete failure, I don't think. It's a big name, and I think that Everton sort of wanted that to come in line with their ambitions as owners, trying to build the club up to be in that challenging for top six. But then at the same time, I'm not sure if he's ever really had much experience, or at least very recently hasn't had much experience at building a club from the level Everton are, and in a competitive league like the Premier League. If it was in Italy, I guess you could probably say there's similar teams to Everton there, but it would be easier to build them up with. And it's Premier League's so unforgiving. I think it's going to be a real challenge for him. But it's just such a weird one. I still don't know how to react to it. I think that it could go really, really well. I definitely think the players there, they've got a decent squad with a couple of additions. I think, they're not a million miles away from competing with sort of the top six or seven. But it's just consistency there. just seems like it doesn't matter who they buy, they're just continually just inconsistent. I'm not sure if Ancelotti's really the right person to take them forward. But they're both exciting and intriguing appointments at the same time, but I'm not completely convinced either of them are going to be a huge success yet. But yeah, I think the Arteta one makes more sense of where Arsenal are now. He's starting with such a low base, it can't really go horrendously wrong. I guess the same for Ancelotti, really. But I think that, you know, that the Arteta one, he knows the club well. He knows the Premier League well. He's been working, or at least, you know, coaching in the Premier League for the last couple of years. So he's aware of how the land currently lies in the league. I'm not sure if Ancelotti is going to be quite as aware of the likes of Sheffield United, maybe, as Arteta will be. They're both exciting, but yeah, I think the Arteta one makes more sense, but both of them, I'm not too convinced by it at this point.
Yeah, the Ancelotti one did definitely feel out of left field, and as you say, Jake, it just kind of seemed like it was convenient timing for both of them. But yeah, just the profile doesn't seem to match, and as I said, he was one of the better favorites to get the Arsenal job, and then seems like he wasn't even that heavily considered for that one. So time will certainly tell, but at first glance, Ancelotti to Everton definitely raises a few eyebrows, and we'll see how it ends up working out over the duration of his tenure. Next up, I wanted to talk about the Club World Cup. Of course, Liverpool winning it yesterday as we record. And I was just curious how you value that achievement. Do you consider that a big achievement for Liverpool, and do you take any pride in it that it's an English club that holds that trophy?
I can't say I do. It's in a way it is an achievement just because you have to win the Champions League to get there, but as a trophy by itself, I really don't consider it that highly, just because the competition level is, I know it's like the winners of all the Champions Leagues from the other footballing bodies, but you always expect the European one to win just because of the level of football here. It's just higher, I guess, not here or there, but it's just higher than it is in the other continents, just because of the money and stuff that's in it. So I can't say I value it particularly highly. Good on them for winning it. You know, trophies are trophies. And again, getting there is the more impressive achievement just because it takes winning the Champions League. But as a trophy by itself, no, I don't value it particularly highly.
No, I don't think I'm that bothered by it, to be honest. I think FIFA want to build it into something. And Liverpool being there has probably done a lot for the competition. But, you know, it was held at a weird time of year. It was held, you know, in Qatar. It's difficult to really get excited by it. Liverpool winning it, I think it's positive for them in that they're just continually building this winning mentality that, you know, in the first couple of years of Klopp, they got to so many finals and they weren't quite doing it. And now they seem to be going to these finals, not playing too well and winning them. I guess that's only a positive habit for them. But, yeah, I'm not... As a fan of a Premier League club, it doesn't really bother me if it's a Premier League club that wins it. And it's, I think for Liverpool in the long term, they're probably more bothered about winning the Premier League. Well, obviously they would be, and this is only going to cause distraction. It's going to be interesting to see how they react to the quick sort of double game week coming up in with a game of Boxing Day and another one a few days later, after that long flight as well, and readjusting. That's going to be a big test for them. And it'll be interesting to see if that has any negative impact. But yeah, I can see why Liverpool fans are happy about it. It's a trophy. They can call themselves the champions of the world, which I guess can be fun, but they've played against a team from Mexico and a team from Brazil, so I'm not really sure if the competition's really worth that much, because, you know, obviously they're to win the Champions League to get there, but once they're there, they're obviously the overwhelming favourites to win it, and they've only really met expectation by doing so.
Yeah, as you both say, I'm sure Liverpool fans will be delighted and not trying to take that away from them by any stretch, and I'm sure they'll enjoy the new patch on their kits, but yeah, I don't think the competition has established itself really as a noteworthy achievement, but of course any fan base that wins it is another thing to add to the list. And as you say, the winning mentality will just kind of keep rolling there at Liverpool as they continue to add accolade upon accolade. We'll wrap up news and notes with an unfortunate issue that happened today in the Tottenham versus Chelsea match. There was a racist incident towards Antonio Rudiger after a red card was fouled, after a red card was called against Sun Heung-min. Rudiger pointed it out to the referee. Then he pointed it out to Azpilicueta, who reported it. And then they formally entered the first step of UEFA's racism protocol, which is making a stadium announcement. They then made two more throughout the match, which technically means they could have abandoned the match. But that obviously did not happen. But the UEFA protocol just dictates what happens on the actual match day. And it, I think, brings up the conversation again about what should be happening in terms of punishment longer term. And we've seen individual punishments, people losing their jobs, people being banned from stadiums for life. But I'm wondering if you guys think it's time to start ramping that up. As these incidents continue to occur, should we start looking at club-level punishments like fines or closed door matches, or in the worst cases, potentially even point deductions, to really try to address something that continues to fester without really being curtailed too much?
Short answer is yes. Yeah, I think we should absolutely up the punishment to something that hurts the club. Hopefully that just means that it'll help. Even, I don't know if it'll necessarily prevent the people from doing it, because obviously, if the people are doing it are already being punished, but hopefully it'll increase the people around them trying to, you know, stop them from doing that, or, you know, report what they hear before it gets to the point where they're doing it to a player or something. It's obviously a very difficult issue to deal with. But something more has to be done than what is currently being done. It just has to be taken to whatever that next level is.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's unfortunate. It's not an issue that's easily solved, but there definitely needs to be an increase in punishment, and the FA need to, and the Premier League, and I think all governing bodies really in football need to see this as a bigger issue than they currently do. I think a lot of the stuff that they do at the moment is for show more than any serious action really being taken, which is sad. And I think, especially in the UK, not to make it political, but it seems that this is a big issue nationwide at the moment, with racism really taking a centre stage with what's happened in recent elections and things like that. So I'm not sure if that's going to play into football and how it's, you know, given in football stadiums, and how it's how frequent it's going to become. I predict it might do, sadly. So it's definitely something that needs to be addressed sooner rather than later. And I think that the incident today it's not great. And I think that, wasn't there a similar incident with Tottenham fans with Aubameyang a year or two ago?
Yeah, they threw a banana a year ago. Yeah,
it's not the first time it's happened with Tottenham. So I think, especially if supporters from certain clubs do, if they're frequent, you know, offenders of racism, or frequent cases come up, I think there definitely needs to be some sort of punishment that affects the club. Unfortunately, it is only the 1%, but if we don't take action strongly, it's only going to fester and get worse.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that what we've done thus far hasn't worked. So I'm all for kind of a ramping up, you know, much like Richard mentioned a couple of weeks ago when we were talking the same thing after the Manchester Derby. It doesn't matter that I'm a Tottenham supporter. I'm, you know, not a racist and anti-racist first before club loyalty. So if it takes something like, you know, a closed door match at minimum, or even, you know, if it happened a third time, if there was a points deduction, just so that people realized that, you know, because clearly the idea that they're hurting other people isn't having an impact. Maybe the idea of hurting their own club and their standing in the league would at least engender some kind of behavioral change, because we've tried to do it nicely, and maybe it's time to get a little bit more unnice about it. All right.
Like, obviously it sucks that it hurts your club, that it hurts people's club who aren't doing the action, but you know what sucks more? Racism.
That it keeps happening. Exactly. All right, we will leave that there and take a break, and then we'll come back and talk more football with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile.
Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, and we are back. Dan, we'll keep with you to start here. Obviously, the big news, we mentioned it in news and notes, the appointment of Mikel Arteta at Arsenal. Was just curious to get your take. We briefly talked about this on Twitter, but what do you make of hiring a candidate who was also up for the job when you hired Emery in the first place? Do you wish you had just hired him then, or do you think he did need more seasoning as an assistant manager before he was really eligible to get a job of this profile?
It's hard. I think I approve of the general risk profile, if that makes sense. Like, I'm cool with the general idea of hiring the assistant coach that is highly thought of by lots of other managers and has experience under a very good manager. So from that perspective, I'm cool with it. I think timing wise, I would have preferred it to happen at instead of Emery, just because I think we had a bit more margin for error at that point. Whereas at this point, we've already spent, what is it, three seasons out of the Champions League? And we're looking to spend another one out. I think the season's already a write-off, which is almost a good thing for Arteta, actually. I think he can, he at least should be allowed to just kind of focus on building up the team and kind of like analyzing who fits with what he wants to do, as opposed to trying to like play for results. Because outside of the Europa League, like, we're not getting top four. There was a whole thing on Arsenal Twitter, like, last season there was a quote hashtag projects, a specific number of points from a specific number of games for the easier part of our schedule. We already had that happen this season. Like, our fixtures only get harder till they flip back around. We have a very difficult Christmas run, or holiday run. And, so this season's basically already over, as far as like what Arteta will do from now. I think it's a fine appointment, but it's a risk. Every appointment obviously is a risk, but this is probably more so than most. I think it's good that we are taking a swing, because quite frankly, covering over the cracks has not been working very well. But it's a risk. It's a very big risk that could, hopefully it pays off, and I'm okay with the risk profile, but that doesn't mean it's going to pay off.
Yeah, also in the wake of the hiring, I've seen a lot of people talk about how the manager wasn't the issue, which is interesting, but that certain players lack the kind of leadership or other English words for intangibles that players at Arsenal require. Do you think there needs to be a player clear out, or do you think that the hiring of Arteta will be enough to turn this club around?
No, I think there needs to be turnover of player as well, though to say Emery was not at fault is also incorrect. I think that's going too far the other way. I definitely think he did a poor job when he was in the job. He was not given like the perfect roster, but the players have more than what they than the results and performances we got out of him under Emery. As far as the whole leadership stuff, I'm not even sure that's wrong, but I know the way it's analyzed in mainstream media is very poor, in my opinion. A lot of it's just based on, like, if you win, you have leadership. If you lose, you don't. I don't even know if they're necessarily wrong in saying that, but I have issue with the process that normally determines it. Like, I'm sure they said we had great leadership after we won, went 22 unbeaten last season, and off of terrible performances. But now that we get the bad results, you know, no. Now our leadership is gone. Where is it gone? I have issue with that general kind of narrative, but even if I'm not necessarily sure if a point itself is wrong.
Gotcha. And then, of course, part of that clear out sounds like it will be Granit Xhaka, with rumors very heavily circulating that he's set to move to Germany. Is this the kind of situation where you'd just be happy to see the back of him after his behavior, after years of kind of lackluster performances, or do you just wish it had worked out?
I mean, I wish it worked out. I wish every player worked out. But at this point, the situation is untenable. I'm not even sure it's like untenable, but it's just, there's just no reason to try and make it work. The fact that he's playing again is surprising to me. And I know some people are really mad about it, but some people aren't that bothered. It probably could make it work if you absolutely wanted to, but he's just not good enough where we have to try. And he is clearly reasonably pissed off the fans enough where he's like, yeah, I want a new start. So I think it's just best for both parties if he moves on.
Gotcha. All right, Jake, we'll come to you now. Newcastle win. That's always fun. It's a late winner from the Magpies, of course. But if, for those that didn't see the match, how did that whole match unfold leading up until that moment?
Oh, so the match was like any other Newcastle match where the game is absolutely terrible. The other team,
as you predicted last week, by the way, so congrats.
Yeah, it was just one of those games where we were just terrible, as we normally are. And the game was really bad to watch. Not many chances. Palace probably the better team. And then we create probably the best chance of the game because we have Andy Carroll, and Premier League defenders can't really seem to defend against him when you get a long ball into the box, which is a recurring theme. Although he's offering no goal for himself, he is creating chances for others, which is a positive. He is having a positive impact on the team, which is, I guess, what you want from your striker, even if they aren't directly scoring the goal. So, yeah, it's weird to be in the position we are, because I really don't think we've been very good this season. A lot of the stats back that up. As I said last week, we are near the bottom of pretty much any indicative stat, but we are ninth in the table. So I'm not sure if there's some sort of intangible that isn't being measured. The only thing I would say is that the players do... I never watch Newcastle think we haven't put in the effort or that there's something lacking. We always defend well. We don't concede too many clear-cut chances. There seems to be a lot of shots from distance or sort of like set-piece chances, which I guess is a problem with the coaching. But I never think we're going to concede a lot of goals, which I think is a follow-on from the Benitez reign. And we got a lot of good centre-backs. At the weekend, we saw Lejeune come back in, which was good. He played really well and adds a little bit more ball-playing ability into the back line, which we need. If we're going to, you know, set up deep and plan the counter-attack, we need defenders that can launch attacks. And he can do that. So, yeah, it was a good performance, another clean sheet. I don't think Palace were very good, but I think the story of the last couple of weeks against Burnley and against Palace, if, you know, it probably would have been fair if they were both 0-0 draws, but we've come off losing 1-1-0 and winning the next. So we're probably 1 point better off than we deserve to be over those two games. But, you know, we're up in ninth, got 25 points, 10 points clear of the bottom three. We're probably not going to be relegated now, even if we are fortunate to have the points total that we do. And hopefully that we can build on the strong defence we've got and start creating a few more clear-cut chances. And hopefully that will come with Almiron, maybe get a little bit more confidence after his goal, having Shelvey back and when Saint-Maximin comes back, that they can develop a lot more creativity than we're currently showing. The striker is still an issue. Joelinton is really not playing well and seems to be a poor signing at this point. He doesn't really suit the style we're playing. Andy Carroll, I think, is much better as an impact player, not a starter. With the way his body is after a lot of those injuries, he seems to be a lot better when he comes on for 10-15 minutes and cause, you know, a lot of problems with his aerial ability. And Dwight Gayle is not a Premier League striker, so that's something we need to work on. Hopefully Joelinton will eventually work out, but it is difficult being the centre forward for a team that don't create many chances. You know, it is a perilous job, and although he's not done too well, I think it's partly because of the environment in which he's playing in. Rondon thrived in that, but even with Rondon, I think we were a little bit more creative last year, and a little bit better on the ball than we are this year. So there's problems. It's not great. Like, we've won, you know, since the Man City game, we've taken 13 points from five games, but we could easily have taken nothing from those five games as well. It's like, if you'd have played those games all over again, we probably wouldn't come out of that the points total that we do. But, you know, you've got to take it. It's football. Football's random. There's clearly something going on at Newcastle that isn't being measured. There are a lot of good stuff there. It's positive time to be a fan at the moment. It's just, you know, results can only go on so far with the performances that we're showing, and we need to be a little bit more consistent across the games in performances, and maybe be a little bit more offence minded when we have the ball. But yeah, it's a positive performance going into Christmas. You can't complain. 25 points from 18 games is a very, very good record.
Yeah, you mentioned there that a goal from Almiron might be a good way to get him going. It was a good goal as well, cutting it back on his right and then curling it into the bottom. How excited are you about what this could mean for him? Because you mentioned it last week, and Almiron himself mentioned it this week in the build-up to the match, that a goal, as you say, could kind of get him going.
Yeah, I said it last week. I feel like I said it a lot on this podcast. I felt like it would only take a goal, but when Thomas brought it up last week, I was a little bit more hesitant in my assessment of Almiron, because there's only so long you can go without scoring goals that you can take something from the performance. But you could see in the stadium, like, everyone was delighted for him. I think that he's deserved a goal, and hopefully this will set him off now, and he can maybe play with a little bit less pressure on him, and not have that sort of hanging over his shoulder that he hasn't scored a Premier League goal that he can push on, especially in the next few weeks. You know, we've got Man United next week. I think that's going to be on Boxing Day, rather, and I think that's a game that we can look at and try and win, given their recent form, especially as how bad they seem to be against teams that set up deep and counter-attack, and that is, you know, what we do. And Almiron's pace will be key to that when we don't have Saint-Maximin. So be interested to see if he can follow up with another good performance there. But yeah, he's definitely, like, his performance levels have deserved so much more than what he's got. But, you know, you have to put the ball in the back of the net, and he's not been doing that. But he did that yesterday, got the 3 points, and to score a winning goal at home, you know, it doesn't get much better than that. If he can't kick on from here, then it would be a disappointment. You know, we're not expecting him to score every week, but if he could, you know, by the end of the season have 5 or 6 goals maybe, that would be a really good return for him. And he's definitely got the potential to do it. He definitely gets the chances to do it. He just needs to be a little bit more clinical. And the way he took that chance yesterday was really impressive. And hopefully, yeah, he can kick on from there.
Yeah, that win also pushes you up to 9th, a solid 10 points off of any of the relegation spots. That was obviously a concern coming into the season. Both commentators and I think even yourself were a little bit worried about potentially being dragged into a relegation fight. Obviously, a lot of season left to play, but we're now at the halfway point. Are you feeling pretty comfy, like you might be able to avoid that whole situation here in 1920?
Yeah, I think we should be able to stay pretty clear of relegation now. I think we should probably be nearer there. Like, I really don't think our performances have warranted 25 points, but we've got them, and we can't complain at having them. And I think that from the last 20 games, we need, say, 15 points. I don't think, you know, any of the bottom three are going to get more than 40 points. So we need 15 points from 20 games. Like, even if we are as bad as we have been, we're probably going to get that, because there are a lot of other bad teams in the league. And we see our home form especially has been really good. We haven't lost there. And in that period, we have had Manchester United, Manchester City, Wolves come to St. James Park. So it's not like we haven't played anybody good there. So I definitely think our home form is probably going to be enough to get us safe. I don't think we'll finish top half, but I reckon we'll be pretty safe in the middle of the table, and it would take quite some collapse now for us to get relegated. I don't think it will happen. And even looking down at the bottom of the table, I don't see Aston Villa, Norwich or Watford getting too many wins over the next few weeks anyway. So I don't think that gap will be cut, even if, you know, we do have a disappointing run over the next few weeks, because we do have some difficult fixtures coming up. But yeah, I think even in the more difficult games, sometimes that's where we have given our best performances. Thought we were good against Man City. We were good against Manchester United and Tottenham to win the game. So I think that, you know, even in the more tricky games, we can pick up some points. And I think that we'll keep ticking along quite nicely and probably get safe by March time, which would represent a really good season for Steve Bruce.
Yeah, we'll go from there into Player Watch, where we're going to talk about who we feel was our club's player of the year for the calendar year 2019. Dan, for Arsenal, who was the player that stood out the most for you this year?
I had to be fair, I have Marco Aubameyang. He's been so much better than everyone else. It's really not a contest. Like, if you ask anyone and they say it's not Aubameyang, I'm really, really worried about their ability to analyze football. He's won the Golden Boot. A lot of that was done in the second half of the season. And now he's our leading goal scorer. He's contributed to half of our goals this season. He carried us through that Valencia tie in the Europa League final last season. He's been so much better. It's really not a contest. He's a fantastic player and a fantastic goal scorer. Hopefully he'll be around for longer, for at least till the end of this season.
Yeah. Any mild whispers in the back of your mind for Bernd Leno, who has started at least this 19-20 season pretty well?
Yeah, he's had a good year. He's been much better than I expected when we purchased him, because I had not heard great things about him from people who watch the Bundesliga, but he's been really good. I can see there are like definitely flaws in his game. He's not that commanding of his penalty area, but as a shot stopper, he's absolutely phenomenal. If there's a second, it's probably him, considering Lacazette's had a bit of a stop and start season this year. I think he's a pretty clear second.
Okay, so Newcastle Player of the Year for 2019. It's a difficult one, really, because, you know, there's a genuine case for giving it to two players that aren't at the club anymore. In Salomon Rondon and Ayoze Perez, who were both incredible for the first half of the year. But that would probably be a little bit unfair on some of the players that are still here and have been here for the duration of the year. So I'll look at the... who's still at the club, but I think the overwhelming choice would be Martin Dubravka. I just think that there aren't many better goalkeepers in the Premier League. Yes, he does make a couple of errors, but I feel that's common for every single goalie in the league outside of Alisson and Edison, really. But the amount of points he's won us, especially this season, he's made so many crucial saves, even over the last few weeks, which, you know, it's a little bit of recency bias, but against Sheffield United he made a couple of key saves when it was 1-0. Yesterday again he had a really good game, and against Southampton he had a good game as well. So he is just really consistent, and he just makes so many good saves. Like, I don't, in terms of shot stopping, he is one of probably the top five keepers in the Premier League, and the fact that we've signed him from the Czech Republic as a 29-year-old, it's just a great piece of scouting by whoever did do that. He signed a new contract this year as well, so he's going to be here for the next few years at least. He's been excellent this year. And I'd expect that you could probably copy and paste what I've said now for next year as well. He's probably going to be just as good as and consistent and valuable to Newcastle. And I think that
all right, and we will wrap up with match previews. Dan, we'll start with you yet again. Bournemouth versus Arsenal. Going to have to travel there to the Vitality Stadium. What are you expecting we see in this one in what I assume will be the first full match under Mikel Arteta?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to know what to expect since it's Arteta's first match, and we know nothing about him as a manager because he's never managed a game before. I don't know who he's going to play because, again, we have no idea. We will, as Arsenal always do, we have a fitness issue at fullback around Christmas period. That happens every year. Why break tradition now? It'll be a weird team just due to who's available. But as far as who plays, it'll be an interesting thing to determine, who he'll use for the rest of the season. And as far as style, I would expect us to at least attempt to be on the front foot. That is kind of... that's the expectation for Arteta, more of a forward-thinking manager, and thinks more about our team than the opposing team. There's only so much we can know about a manager who's never managed a game before. It'll be very, very interesting, and we will likely learn a lot I think we will learn a lot from that game.
It'll be interesting. I'm curious to see if we see a little bit of City's tactics in him, of course, with that being where he was assistant for so long. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what kind of brand he established for himself as a manager. As you say, he has not done that yet. And Jake, we'll come to you next to talk about Manchester United versus Newcastle.
This is going to be a really interesting game, I think. Manchester United had shown some sort of revival after the wins over Spurs and Manchester City, but it seems to be that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer can't coach teams against teams that sit deep. He can't find a way to win those games on a consistent basis. Yeah, there's been a few times where they've come out on top, but it seems just to be a mental block of the team that they can't cope with it. And we saw it again against Watford today. It was a poor error from David De Gea for the first goal, but for the second, it was a really poor piece of defending from Wan-Bissaka. And he's been threatening to give penalties away like that all season. And it finally happened on a breakaway. And the amount of times that De La Feo got through in a one-on-one situation on a Manchester United defender was incredible. And if we, you know, he didn't make the most of that. It could easily have been more if Watford were more clinical. And that was playing against a side that had scored 9 goals before today. So, I mean, Newcastle aren't too much better than that with 18, but, you know, it's double the amount. And we've got players that can cause some problems on the counter-attack. I'd expect Almond to have a big part to play. Shelvey, creating from deep, is going to cause some problems. And I think maybe even Christian Atsu might be one to bring in with his pace as well, and possibly even Dwight Gayle. Like, that we do have pace in the team, and I think that we can definitely cause some problems. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Solskjaer to get a result on Boxing Day. I saw today that Pochettino's now gone odds on favour to be the next Manchester United manager. Like, that's only going to build if they keep dropping points. Somehow they are level on points with Newcastle in the league, so we've got that motivation of if we go there and win, we can move above them, which, yes, man, they are in a poor state at the moment, but still Manchester United, and to be above them in the Premier League at the halfway stage would be incredible for Newcastle, so we've got that as well. Beating them already this season, and we were probably the better team on that day. I think Saint-Maximin was crucial. He won't be available on Thursday, but still think that we've got a huge chance, and if we can really limit them in the first half and keep it at 0-0, I think the pressure is really going to build and the atmosphere could sort of turn toxic. The one worry I have is Pogba coming back. I think we saw when he came on today the creativity he brought. Manchester United probably should have scored once, if not twice, when he was on the pitch. He did open up a lot of doors for them. And if he comes into the starting 11, he's somebody that can cause us real problems. But I'm not sure if they will bring him in that quickly. Maybe the situation and the vulnerability of Solskjaer might mean that he does it out of necessity. But yeah, it's definitely an opportunity for us. I'm going to say we draw 1-1. But yeah, I definitely think it could go any 3 ways. It really depends probably if Pogba plays and what Manchester United team turns up, because I think we'll get a pretty consistent Newcastle performance out of it. We'll be solid at the back, be difficult to break through, and I think maybe that first goal will be key. If they get a first goal early, we might get beaten 2 or 3, but if we can limit them, keep it 0-0 and get a goal early in the second half, I think we've got a real opportunity to win. But I'll say 1-1 and hedge my bets on this one.
Yeah, it's definitely been a weird period of late under Solskjaer, with big wins against Tottenham and City, and then weird losses like today against Watford, who hadn't won at all. So you definitely have a chance for sure, and as you say, chance to move ahead of them in the table. All right, that will do it for our show today. Thanks to you guys so much for joining us. If there's anything you'd like to plug or want to tell people where they could reach you, now would be a good time.
All right, guys, thanks for having me on. I'm still Dan. I'm still an Arsenal fan, and you can still get me on Twitter at @_jersey_fits.
Thanks for listening, guys. You get me on Twitter at @JakeJackWith2Ns. I think we will have a championship show, hopefully, recorded tomorrow morning. So that should be out before Christmas. So give that one a listen when it does come out.
Yeah, as always, show a little love to our championship show. Jake and the guys do a fantastic job over there. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at @Kevroff. I've stopped most of my writing gigs, but as always, excellent fantasy coverage over at ESPN and Goal. And then obviously great matches come out of Omnisport as well. So check all of those things out, even though I'm not at any of them anymore. But anyway, as we say, that'll do it for us today. Thanks again for you guys for joining us today. It was a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.